Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. Welcome back into Mid Madness. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and we're excited to get into an hour's worth of what's happening across the sports realm in the state of Michigan. There is tons to dive into, so make sure you are seated proper and ready to go. As well, there's not a ton in Michigan to talk about. Obviously, we're going to get in on the Tigers. We'll do a small Michigan basketball update as more things are going on over there. Then we'll get in on the NBA offseason as things are just about wrapped up over there and a couple big announcements have happened recently. And then we'll get into the WNBA and what's happening over in their league as they prepare to enter into the halfway point of their season. All-star break is here. They're getting ready to have the all-star game and then get it right back into the swing of things for the second half of season. And then we'll end out with our picks like always. I'm so excited for the end of the week to be here, if I'm being honest. It has been a long week. Although I'm not coaching lacrosse anymore, work is still work. Life is still life. There's so many other things going on for all of us that this week has been a long one. So for it to finally be Friday, I'm sitting here recording so we can get this out to you Saturday morning. I am elated. And I'm looking forward to the weekend. More professional lacrosse on the realm for me. Obviously, Tigers baseball is worth watching at the moment. Some UFC going to be going down and more action all over the place as the WNBA All-Star Game. And then all of the aftermath that will be the rest of the NBA offseason after the news that I'm going to be sharing with you today. But with all of that being said, we have gotten through the obligatories. And I hope that you guys had a fantastic week and are looking toward a fantastic weekend. It's now time for us to start where we always start, with our Detroit Tigers. Well, that's where we always start in this realm of things. When we get over in football, we know where we're going first. That's going to be the football fields. But now we're over in Comerica Park. Tigers still fighting for their chances in to make the playoffs. They're still currently second from the bottom in the AL Central. Detroit Tigers, 49-54, six games behind the Central leading Chicago White Sox. The Royals at the bottom of the division, 43-61, 12 and a half games back. The Guardians, only 1.5 games behind the White Sox. They're 4.5 games above the Tigers at 54-50. And then the Twins, who are just a game and a half above the Tigers at 51-53. They're 4.5 games back of the White Sox. So the Tigers are making that push to try and get themselves right back at the top of the AL Central. That's the safest way, and I think the easiest way for them to get into the playoffs this year is for them to go out and win the AL Central, which is still very winnable. Being six games back and you're just past the halfway point of the season, you can make it happen. You have, I believe they have another series against the White Sox, which would be huge. They have another series against the Twins. They're in the middle of a series against the Royals right now. They have another series against the Guardians. If I'm not mistaken, I'm going to take a look at their schedule to make sure I'm correct on this. So they're in the middle of a Royals series right now. They have the Guardians the 11th, 12th, and 13th of August. White Sox immediately follow 14th, 15th, 16th of August. Then they see the Royals again the 21st, 22nd, 23rd of August. They see the Twins August 31st, September 1st, September 2nd, and then September 4th, a doubleheader, September 5th, September 6th, they see the Guardians before seeing the Twins again September 7th, 8th, and 9th. They have the White Sox the 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. So there's huge ground for them to make up in the division with interdivisional series alone. just those alone. But then you think about how the fact that they have to play a lot of other teams, some are favorable for them, some not so much. They do have another series against the A's coming up. That's great for them. Baltimore series will be rough. The Seattle Mariners series will be rough. The Giants, I think, is favorable. Obviously, you want to go out and have good showings against the Guardians and the White Sox. Pittsburgh is another team that I feel is up there and a chance for them to go out and have success. You have to beat Kansas City again. Tampa Bay, the Dodgers, those are both tough. Then you get Minnesota, Guardians, Minnesota. You got to go out and beat the Rockies. Blue Jays, another tough series. Then you have a four-game with the White Sox on the 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th that you got to pay attention to. And then you end out with Washington and Pittsburgh, which are both kind of in favor to you as the Tigers. So if they go out and handle business in their interdivisional series, they're really closing the gaps there and trying to get back ahead. And then if they're able to steal a couple of series from everyone else that they're playing throughout the season or the second half of the season, I see success heading their way. In fact, they've already started the success of the second half of the season. But before we get to that, you know where we're going from here. We're going over to the team leaders. Riley Green leads the batting average department at .285, his on-base percentage of .374, and a slugging percentage of .469. Home runs and RBI still belong to Dylan Dingler. He's got 22 home run jacks, 66 runs batted in, and he's batting at a .274 on the year. Looking at the pitching, Keiter Montero is making waves. 3.14, pie on the numbers for his earned run average. He's got 7 wins and 78 strikeouts. His 7 wins also lead the team, and we know who's leading the team in strikeouts. As much as we would love for it to be Tarek Skubal, he has dealt with some injuries this year that has kept him off the mound as much as he would have liked to have been there. Jack Flaherty leads the Tigers in strikeouts this year so far, 102 on the year. His ERA of 4.59, which is not fantastic, and he only has 3 wins on the year. This is where the real issue is, though. The Tigers cannot get better batting on the season. They have been stuck between basically 20 and 30 for every batting statistical category all season long. 437 runs, 21st in the league. Batting average of .235, 25th in the league. On-base percentage of .312, 22nd in the league. The only thing able to escape this metric is the slugging percentage, and not by much. It's sitting at a .400, .400, and it's 17th in the entire league. So it's not even like they're getting great batting to, I don't know, supplement the fantastic pitching they have gotten all season long. For the most part, they have been a top 10 pitching team all season long. And that was with Casey Mize and Skubal having to sit out for a time because of injuries. Also, Justin Verlander has not thrown in this rotation yet either. Yet their ERA is a 3.63, sitting at 6th in the league. Quality starts of 38, 8th in the league. Their whip, 1.23, and their opponent batting average of .234 are both 7th in the league. Those are the things you need in order to have success, but it can't be one-sided. The pitching can't win games for the Tigers all season long. The bats have to show up. And, I mean, with that being said, you got a lot of that this past weekend, or this past week, with the couple of series that we're going to dive into in here in just a second. But there's some very important news that we have to bring up and talk about first. The most important thing is Tarek Skubal has come out about like kind of how things are looking for him on the outlook of the season. He said his preference is to finish the season with the Tigers and compete for a World Series. And he knows his next start could be the last with the team. I think we have a chance to win the World Series, Skubal said Thursday. I've said that since spring training. That's never changed. That belief in this team has never changed throughout the season. Obviously, we put ourselves in a tough situation, but I think we've come out of that situation playing really good baseball. Going into spring training and the whole offseason, I've never been more motivated to try and win a World Series for the city, the team that drafted me and helped develop me. That's always been the goal, and that will never change unless I'm told I'm on a different team. The Tigers have until August 3rd to decide whether to keep Skubal, who can become a free agent after the World Series, or deal the 2-time Cy Young Award winner in a blockbuster trade to perhaps bolster their future with players and prospects. He's 6-5, 2.83 ERA on the season. Is scheduled to pitch against the Royals last night, Friday night, as I'm recording this at Comerica Park, and acknowledged it might be his last start for the Tigers. He said that might be reality, but also 5 days later, there's another one at home. The 29-year-old righty had surgery on May 6th, removed a loose body from his pitching elbow, and returned to pitch on June 13th. That way, the way the surgery went is exactly how it was supposed to go. I don't know if remarkable is the word I would use. They were 22-38 at the start of June, have rallied well enough to be in the playoff picture as questions swirl about the franchise will do with Skubal. There's a lot of intrigue around him, and the reason is he's really good, said by A.J. Hinch, the Tigers manager. So we know that Skubal wants to stay, but we do not know if he will be there at the end of the deadline. So that's something to keep our eyes on moving forward. But as I mentioned, they got some bats to help him out. Since coming back for the second half of the season from the All-Star break, the Tigers are 7-2. They have a 2-1 win over the Angels, a 7-0 win over the Angels, and then a 3-2 loss to the Angels, won that series 2-1. Then they had a three-game series against the Cubs. They won 8-6 in 10 innings in the first game. They lose 11-2 in the second game and then bounce back and win 5-1 in the third game. So they take that series 2-1 as well. And then they're walking right into their four-game series against the Kansas City Royals, where they lead the series at the moment 1-0. They did go out and handle business Thursday night. They went 4-3. As you know, Skubal was on the mound last night as I'm recording this Friday afternoon. So you know how that game went down. Mize versus Wacha on the mound tomorrow, 1:10 p.m. And then Valdez and Avila will wrap things up on Sunday at 1:40. Tigers have a great chance to sweep this series, win this series 3-1, and really get themselves not only some catch up in the division, but really in the wild card race too. The Tigers do have a legitimate chance to make the playoffs. And everybody knows once you make the playoffs, all bets are off and anybody can do anything. So I think the Tigers really have to focus on making the playoffs. What we see that they have coming up next week, Monday, 6:40 p.m., Montero and Bradish as the Tigers take on the Orioles. Melton versus Kremer, and then Skubal versus Rogers. I'm not going to talk a ton about that series. That's coming up in our picks later on in the show. And then they have the Athletics coming up the 31st, the 1st, and the 2nd. So next weekend, Mize versus Springs, Valdez versus Perkins, and Montero versus Jump. So three games. The Friday and Saturday are 9:40 p.m. each. And then the Sunday game is a 4:05 first pitch. All three of those games should be wins for the Tigers. If you sweep the Royals and the A's, you go out and you win a 2-1 series against Baltimore, you're putting yourself in phenomenal position. But we'll touch in next week about our Tigers and what they got going on with more Mid-Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
The love of the game draws us to sports as players, coaches, spectators, and officials. For officials, it's a way to stay in the game they once played, to feel the thrill of putting on the uniform, stepping out of the playing surface, hustling to make the call, and building the relationships which can only be built in sports. If you still have that love for the game, we always need new officials. Register now at MHSAA.com. A message from the Michigan High School Athletic Association, promoting the value and values of educational athletics.
Welcome back into Mid-Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and we have a bombshell that has dropped as we're going to get into the NBA off-season talk. LeBron James, a free agent this year, told the Lakers he would not be returning to Los Angeles. And, I mean, if he did, it wouldn't be with them because he would be leaving the Lakers organization, opening up his free agency to go somewhere where he could join a championship contender and then have an opportunity to play golf year-round, both indoor and outdoor, in the best possible facilities. And that was really tailoring his decision. So he had Golden State, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, Miami, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Dallas. These are kind of the places he was looking at going to. Obviously, Cleveland was back on the list as well. He wanted to keep some options open. Everyone feels like, you know, LeBron's getting ready to retire. Obviously, none of us know when he is actually going to retire because we're not LeBron James. We'll find out when he tells us that he's ready to retire, but we do know where he will be playing next, and we're going to dive into that right now. He says he seriously considered retirement, but has decided to sign with the Philadelphia 76ers for his final run at another NBA championship, he announced on Friday. James 41 is signing a two-year, $8 million contract with a player option, according to Clutch Sports Group CEO Rich Paul, who told ESPN's Shams Charania. James made nearly $53 million with the Los Angeles Lakers last year. In a series of posts on X, James addressed his decision-making, writing that he initially thought he was done playing after the 25-26 season before taking time to decide on his future. I was honest at the last press conference when I said I needed to look at myself and decide if I still love this game. He wrote, after deciding, I still truly love this game and I have more to give. James chose the 76ers, committing to a fourth NBA team as he searches for a fifth NBA championship before retirement. James will hope to bring a 43-year championship drought for the 76ers to an end, much the same way he erased a 52-year streak without a title for the city of Cleveland when he won a championship with the Cavaliers in 2016. This will be James's final free agency choice as he enters a record-breaking 24th season. He says, this is my last decision. I'm not going for money. I'm not going for family. What am I really playing for at this point? James wrote on X, I still want to sacrifice. I still want to work. I still want to grind. I still want to compete to win and to have a chance at the feeling of winning another championship. I believe I can help make the Philadelphia 76ers a championship team, and I'm so excited to energize a new fan base and start this incredible journey one last time. Paul, as James's agent, had expressed that his client was prioritizing basketball happiness as the impetus to leave the Lakers. The 76ers interpreted that as a chance to win and sold their situation as such. Bob Myers, the president of Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, which owns the Sixers, appeared as a guest on Paul's podcast, Game Over, with co-host Max Kellerman to make a digital pitch. If he was here, I'd say, I honestly believe this is your best chance to win. You have to decide all the other things that are equally important, Meyer said. But what I would just say is, if it's about winning, let's talk about this team because you can win here in Philadelphia. The 76ers came at James from all angles. President of basketball operations Mike Gansey, who was a Cavaliers executive during James' second stint in Cleveland and competed against him when they were high school players in Northeast Ohio, stayed in constant communication with Paul behind the scenes. Meanwhile, a trio of Sixers players, Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid, and the newly acquired Jaylen Brown, another surprising addition for Philadelphia this offseason, worked on James directly. That effort was led by Maxey, a fellow Clutch client who has referred to James as a big brother in the past. Maxey posted Instagram stories of him celebrating in a gym and yelling, "What? What?" along with the news, while Brown wrote, hashtag throw the ball up on X. Brown wrote that in his introductory note to Philadelphia and has already been branded on billboards throughout the city. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro even proclaimed Friday as LeBron James Day in the state. This is insanity. Man hasn't even stepped foot over there as a resident, and you already got a day named after him in the state. Talk about being the GOAT for real. James returns to the emergent Eastern Conference that includes two of his former teams that heavily pursued the four-time MVP, Donovan Mitchell and the Cavaliers, and then obviously Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Miami Heat. The Sixers went 45-37 last season and lost to the eventual champion New York Knicks 4-0 in the second round of the playoffs. It had been more than four decades since the 76ers last won their title in 1983, and they have only two other conference finals appearances and one NBA finals appearance in that span. The furthest they have gotten with Embiid is Game 7 of the conference semifinals against the Toronto Raptors in 2019 when Kawhi Leonard's final shot bounced around the rim before ending their season. Following James's announcement, the 76ers moved from 20-1 to plus 900 to win the NBA Finals and from plus 750 to plus 370 to win the Eastern Conference at DraftKings Sportsbook. In jurisdictions that allows the market, the 76ers had opened at 30-1 to sign James. Philadelphia was part of James's early basketball journey as a junior in high school. He traveled with St. Vincent St. Mary to play a road game against Strawberry Mansion at the University of Pennsylvania's storied Palestra Gym. James had praised the Philadelphia fan base after he scored 12 of his 29 points in the fourth quarter to lift the Lakers to a 112-108 win in December. One thing you know about Philly fans, they don't care about anybody besides their home teams, and I respect and I love that, James said. I've played here for obviously 23 years, a lot more when I was in the Eastern Conference, but to be able to have an appreciation for the city of brotherly love and for me to go out and still play the game that I love and them respect it, whatever the case may be, if they do, is pretty cool. He puts an end to a free agency frenzy of speculation about his options over the past several weeks, one fueled in part by Paul going on a media tour to discuss James's prospects, notably drawing out a list of potential suitors on a whiteboard for an episode of his podcast. But Paul wasn't the only one. Sports talk radio stations put callers on air swearing they had inside information about James's next steps. Posts on X went viral for featuring superstitious photos of James crisscrossing the country during his downtime, with each location framed on the social media platform as a supposed clue as to where he would play the next. All the hoopla muted the fallout of James's departure from the Lakers after an 8-year run with the franchise, which included the 2020 championship and was his longest consecutive tenure with any team during his career. After James, Luka Doncic, and Austin Reeves fueled a 16-2 stretch from late February through the end of March last season, while James taking a supporting role at the behest of Coach J.J. Redick, it appeared that he could ride that out in Los Angeles until retirement. But instead, his talents are going to the city of brotherly love. Obviously, there are reactions and winners all over the place. They gave the 76ers an A-plus grade for this because why wouldn't they, right? Like, it makes total sense for them to go out and do that. But, I mean, the Lakers, I think, are in a great position now for them to step into their new role as a team and what they want that team to look like. And then, obviously, anybody who didn't get LeBron that wanted him is kind of on the outside looking in. But it just creates space for their teams to really blow. Like, the Lakers lost in a sweep against Oklahoma City Thunder in the second round, showed the limitations of that approach. But now that he's sharing a team with Tyrese Maxey, Jaylen Brown, Joel Embiid, it's unlikely that LeBron will ever be the lone healthy star in Philadelphia. Notably, these three co-stars all play a different position from James, which makes him an ideal positional fit on this new team. With new 76ers, Brown and Dean Wade sharing the floor along him, the rising sophomore BJ Edgecombe, James will often be able to hide on defense, though not completely because of Maxey's defensive limitations, which is a key way to keep him healthy and rested in his 40s. The new power rankings, now that we see where teams are moving around. Oklahoma City Thunder stays at 1. They have the notable addition of Adai Mara. They lose Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, and Lu Dort all via trades. San Antonio Spurs sitting at 2nd. No notable departures, but they did add Tobias Harris via free agency. The Knicks at 3rd. They lose Mitchell Robinson, bring in Andre Drummond, both via free agency. The Nuggets climbing up to 4th from 6th. Tyus Jones, they added via free agency, but they lose both Tim Hardaway Jr. and Jonas Valanciunas. The Sixers sitting at 5 now. They moved up from 12. Obviously, their additions being LeBron James, Anthony Simmons, Dean Wade, all via free agency, Jaylen Brown via trade, and LeBaron Filon Jr. via draft. They lose Paul George and Andre Drummond, respectively, going to their teams. The Pistons sitting at 6. They added John Collins and Isaiah Joe, free agency and trade, respectively. They lose Tobias Harris, Caris LeVert, and Isaiah Stewart, free agency, and then trades, respectively, across those two. Timberwolves move up to 7 after picking up LaMelo Ball, even though they lost Julius Randle, Naz Reid, Kyle Anderson, Mike Conley. Cavs at 8, picking up Malik Thomas, losing Dean Wade. Celtics at 9, picking up Paul George, Mitchell Robinson, Mike Conley, losing Jaylen Brown and Nikola Vucevic. And closing in at 10 are the Houston Rockets. They added Marcus Smart, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and Bruce Thornton. They did lose Dorian Finney-Smith. Lakers at 11, Heat at 12, Raptors 13, Hawks 14, Pacers 15, Magic 16, Utah 17, Portland Trailblazers 18, Warriors 19, Suns 20, Hornets 21, Wizards 22, Mavericks 23, Clippers 24, Bulls 25, Grizzlies 26, Pelicans 27, Nets 28, Bucks 29, and Kings at 30. So that's what the power rankings are looking like after those moves there. I mean, obviously, we expected the 76ers to move up quite a bit. The Timberwolves got a nice boost. Obviously, you know, the Thunder, Spurs, Knicks still sitting up near the top. The Pistons being six was a little bit of a surprise to me with some of the losses that they had in free agency and trades. And I didn't think that they did enough in the draft and in the trade cycle and free agency to make up for it. But also, I'm not the experts. I think I am. I definitely think I am. But the true experts went out and said, hey, the Pistons are still one of the best teams in the league. They're a top six, top 10-ish team in the league. We just have to see how they're going to perform. So I'm interested to see. But what a blockbuster move by LeBron James to end up over in Philadelphia, a city I love very much. But that's all we got for now. We'll be back to talk UMich basketball and WNBA when we get back from the break. More Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Torque.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. A good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives with your gifts. Your heart could keep beating. Your kidneys could keep filtering. And your intestines could keep on digesting for others. And that's not all. You can improve the lives of 50 more people as an eye and tissue donor, restoring sight and health. And you're not just helping out the person receiving the transplant. You're touching whole families with your life-saving gift. Register in minutes. Just go to organdonor.gov. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Sign up today. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
There's danger out there. It lurks on highways and quiet neighborhood streets. It's more likely to kill you than a shark and more terrifying than the biggest snake. Distracted driving claims lives every day. Every notification, swipe, social post, video, or selfie while driving risks your life. So while you might think public speaking or the zombie apocalypse is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and we're getting ready to talk some UMich basketball before touching in on the WNBA for just a moment. First things first with Michigan. The Duke-Michigan game is no longer going to be played. It was supposed to be down in Miami. Instead, the game has been removed from the schedule. The Wolverines have been replaced by the Texas Tech Red Raiders. The highly anticipated December 21st non-conference men's basketball game between the Duke Blue Devils and the Michigan Wolverines has been called off, sources told ESPN on Friday. The game was originally scheduled to be played at Madison Square Garden, but a misinterpretation of broadcast rights forced the sides to attempt to move the game to Lone Depot Park, home of the Miami Marlins. However, the broadcast rights issues remained and all parties couldn't come to an agreement, ultimately forcing the game to be canceled. Duke will now play Texas Tech on December 21st at Madison Square Garden, sources told ESPN, a rematch of last year's thrilling 82-81 Red Raiders win at the Garden on December 20th. The Duke versus Michigan game, a rematch of a February matchup in Washington, D.C., won by the Blue Devils, was announced in late April as a part of Duke's first-of-its-kind enterprise partnership with Amazon. The agreement has also included Duke facing UConn in Las Vegas on November 25th and Gonzaga in Detroit on February 20th, with the game streamed exclusively on Prime Video. The other two games are set to go ahead, with Duke's newly scheduled contest with Texas Tech also airing exclusively on Prime Video. Duke is number two in ESPN's Way Too Early Top 25, despite the departures of consensus player of the year Cameron Boozer and second leading scorer Isaiah Evans. Coach John Shire has built his deepest team in Durham, welcoming the nation's number two recruiting class and Wisconsin transfer John Blackwell, the best guard in the portal this spring. Texas Tech has gone three straight NCAA tournaments under Coach Grant McCaslin, winning 74 games during his time in Lubbock. The Red Raiders have not finished lower than third in the Big 12 under McCaslin, and recently announced that All-American forward JT Toppin, who suffered a torn ACL in February, is expected to suit up next season. The agreement between Duke and Amazon represents the company's first foray into broadcasting live college sports beginning next season. Prime Video will exclusively present three Duke neutral site non-conference games per season. Duke worked with the ACC and ESPN on future scheduling commitments in exchange for the ability to play these three neutral site games, including participating in select ESPN-owned and operated neutral site events in 27-28 and 28-29 seasons. So unfortunately, we won't see the rematch this year between Duke and Michigan, essentially because Duke wants all of those games to be streamed on Amazon. And as you can imagine, Michigan wants to go through Fox, Paramount Plus, etc., all the Peacock, all the other programs that the Big Ten and Michigan have continued to use for their streaming over the last couple of years when it comes to basketball. That is what the real problem was here. They tried to play in multiple different places, eventually had to choose to not play each other. So I'm sure we'll see a rematch get put together at some point. I just don't think it'll be this upcoming season, maybe in 28, maybe in 29, but I don't believe we'll see it in the 26-27 season. But what we do have already for the 26-27 season is a look at bracketology. Way too early, but the predictions are out. The number one overall seed is Florida at the moment. They have Oklahoma State coming in as the last team in, and LSU being the first team out. Obviously, we'll run through and just point out the big names. We'll start with the one seeds: Florida, Duke, Michigan, Illinois. Those are your one seeds all across the board. Two Big Ten teams getting in. Michigan and Illinois seeming to keep the pace at the top of the conference. But looking through at some of the other Big Ten teams that are supposed to make it in next year's bracket, Wisconsin coming in as a 9 seed. Purdue gets a 4 seed. They give Iowa an 11 seed here. Nebraska gets a 7 seed. Michigan State gets a 2 seed. Obviously, Michigan and Illinois at those 1 seeds, like we just mentioned. UCLA and Ohio State both coming in as 9s. USC a 6 seed, which I think would be more than favorable for the Trojans if they're able to pull that off in this upcoming season. Oregon coming in as an 11 seed. Indiana gets a 7 seed as well. So a large portion of the conference getting in here. They have Ohio State on the bubble with Texas A&M, Creighton, and NC State. They call them the last four byes. No Big Ten teams in the last four in. First four out, you got Maryland sitting right behind LSU and the teams between 77 and 80 that are going to miss the cut, along with Cincinnati and West Virginia. And then Florida State, Mississippi, Utah State, and Virginia Tech are the next four out. So far, multi-bid conferences. SEC, Big Ten lead the way, both with 12 each. The Big 12 has 10. ACC and Big East have 7 apiece. Atlantic 10, West Coast, and ASUN all have 2. Everyone else just clinging on to their automatic qualifiers. Oklahoma State was a new team to the bracket. Miami re-entered the bracket. We have a couple that have moved up some spaces, like TCU, Arizona State, Texas Tech, Xavier, Virginia, Texas, Arkansas, Baylor, Gonzaga, New Mexico, St. John's, Marquette all dropped at least one space. So it'll be interesting to see how these continue to shape around each other and what that's going to look like for them over the next couple of months as that season starts to commence. But Michigan looks to be in great shape, even though they're not going to be playing the Blue Devils this year. The WNBA is in an interesting space here. Some people feel like Caitlin Clark is saving the league. Others feel like she's bringing a lot of unnecessary drama and issues to the league. They say Stephen A. Smith even insists that the off-court headlines have to be addressed about Caitlin Clark and how they are feeding into the problem. Does Caitlin Clark have a technical foul problem as she picked up her 7th in a game recently against the Seattle Storm? Like, these are all things that are coming out. And now the biggest thing is Stakeholders are questioning Kathy Engelbert's fit as the WNBA commissioner. They say she's defensive, dismissive, and sometimes even condescending. In the darkest days of the past 12 months, full of public vitriol and contentious labor negotiation, Kathy Engelbert leaned on teachings and advice she had gathered over 40-plus years in corporate America. One leader who has stuck with her for more than a decade is retired four-star Admiral Bill McRaven, who went viral for a 2014 commencement address at the University of Texas, where he shared life lessons from his Navy SEAL training. McRaven's most well-known piece of advice is, if you want to change the world, start off by making your own bed. But Engelbert focused on another teaching from McRaven. It's easy to lead in good times, Engelbert told ESPN in a phone interview last week. Where leaders really emerge, in my experience, is when you're in... is when you're best in your darkest moments and you don't give up. Engelbert has navigated numerous challenges in her 7 years as WNBA commissioner, from two collective bargaining negotiations to a global pandemic and social unrest to inheriting a business with, in her words, no money, no scale, no capability. Yet she might be living the darkest moments of her tenure now. A tempest surrounding her leadership emerged last fall when Nafisa Collier, one of the league's biggest stars, said an explosive end-of-season interview with that Engelbert was negligent in her governance and that the WNBA had the worst leadership in the world. Nearly 10 months later, what should be a celebratory summer of the league's 30th season of the W's brightest, brilliant star power and making it through strenuous labor negotiations with the historic agreement has instead felt like one of exasperation. Players, teams, fans consistently and loudly voice frustrations over officiating and divisive discourse and increased harassment toward players seem never ending. Even the league's retroactive assessment of these things have also been turned into spectacle. All of it, plus Engelbert's perceived absence publicly and in league circles, has renewed the referendum on her leadership. So we'll see kind of where that's going to go and if she'll still be leading next season. But we have all that we have talked about here for basketball at the moment. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking our picks. Here I'm in Madness on 95.3 The Week. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and coming back from the break, it's time for us to get into my favorite part of the show. We're getting into the picks. Every single week, we line up at least six games, contests, matches, or any other type of competition, and then we decide who's going to win. We pick and tell you why. We know exactly what's going to happen, and most of the time, I think I do fairly well. I think I know ball quite well, and other times, I am humbled quickly. But I would love for y'all to humble me as well. Head on over to the 95.3 The Ticket app, and of course, submit your picks every single week and play along with us. All you have to do is listen to the six games, contests, etc. that we load up for the week. Listen to me do my deliberation, my research, and talk about why I know ball oh so well and everything that I'm saying is right and I know exactly who's going to win. And then you can listen to me pick my picks and tell you why they're going to be the best. And the cool thing is when you play along, you can do your own research, your own deliberation, and think through and talk about why what you believe will be right so you can pick the perfect 6-0 week. That's what we're all looking for, right? That perfect, unblemished 6-0 week on a consistent basis. I've had a few, but man, is it hard to know what's going to happen before it even happens. Maybe you know a little bit more than I do. If you think you know ball the way I know ball, hit that chat feature on 95.3, The Ticket app, and send in those picks. If you happen to do better than me in a whole season's worth of picks, we'll have something special for you. We just yet to see it happen. We know how it fared with Jacob. Just want to see if any of you know ball better than he does. With that being said, last week, I didn't know ball at all, and it was quite a humbling week for me. I went 2-4 last week. Argentina lost to Spain in the World Cup final. France did not show up against England in the third place game. Liberty couldn't get the best of Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Mitchell, Aaliyah Boston, and the rest of the Indiana Fever. They did go out and get the best of the Wings, which I did not think was going to be the case. But my two saving graces of the week were the Minnesota Lynx taking care of the Portland Fire. Almost zero qualms and problems there. And then the Valkyries doing their business against the Mystics, although they played the Mystics again a couple days later after the game we picked, and the Mystics got their get back. So that's going to be an interesting series and rivalry that builds over the next couple of years. But that 2-4 record last week puts me at 73-65-1 for this rendition of picks. We are right around the corner from college football and NFL football from starting. That's when this season will end and we'll start a new one. But man, is it getting tight. I'm only technically like 8 games above 500, and I surely would like to be more than that. Getting into our first game of the week, we are starting in the WNBA, right where we started or ended last week. So we'll pick up right where we left off. The Portland Fire, who are 11-16 going into the weekend, 5-9 on the road, they're taking on the Las Vegas Aces, 18-8, 7-5 at home. The weird thing is Carla Leighy, Emily Engsler, and company have been great for the Fire. Obviously, it sucks for them to lose Sarah Ashley Barker for the season with her knee injury. That is really taking a toll on them. But they've been a team that has shocked people this season and has been able to come out and have very, very good games and take some of the top teams to the brink, if not upset them. Coming into the game, the matchup predictor only given a 13.2% chance to the Fire, 86.8% chance to the Aces. The Aces are 11.5-point favorites, -820 on the money line, +545 for the Fire, 177.5 on the over-under. The Aces currently lead the season series 2-0. They had a slacking of the Fire back on June 11th, 105-89. And then most recently, they played again on July 9th. And the Aces only won by 8. So this game could be a lot closer. It is going to be at Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. The Aces are 7-5 at home. I mean, but 5-9 on the road isn't terrible. Portland actually is sitting 5th in the Western Conference, so this could be a huge help if they want to try and work their way into the playoffs. They need a lot of help, but this would be a good start for them. Meanwhile, Vegas sitting in 3rd, and they're trying to do their best to jump Golden State and try and get back in the conversation with the Minnesota Lynx at the top of not only the Western Conference, but the entire WNBA. Give me the Aces to take down the Fire. The New York Liberty will travel right on over to the West Coast as well. They're 15-12, 7-7 on the road, taking on the Los Angeles Sparks, who are 10-16, 5-8 at home. Liberty a 54.7% chance to win. Sparks 45.3%. The Sparks are 4.5-point underdogs. They're +149 on the money line. Liberty sitting at -182 on that money line, +183.5 on the over under. Brianna Stewart, Astier, Inescu, and Jonquel Jones going against Nneka Ogwumike, Erica Wheeler, Kelsey Plum, and company. Plum is still out with a lower leg injury. She is expected to return sometime soon, along with Alyssa Peely. So those could be helpful for them if they're able to return for this game. The Sparks did beat the Liberty the first time they played back on June 21st, 98-97. Both these teams trying to fight to either maintain or get into the playoff picture. This game will be at Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles, California. And even though this is a home game where the Sparks have won half their games, they've also lost half their games at home. They've won half their games on the road and lost half their games on the road. They have 5 wins at home, 5 wins on the road. They have 8 losses at home, 8 losses on the road. Meanwhile, things are a little bit different for the Liberty. Liberty only have 5 losses at home. They have 7 losses on the road, but they also have 7 wins. So they're an even team, and I really like what's on the floor for them. It could be tricky if Kelsey Plum is able to come back, but we are not 100% sure on what that's going to look like. So I'm leaning on the side of caution. I'm going to go with the Liberty over the Sparks in this July 28th game. Then on July 29th, the Atlanta Dream, 16-10, 7-6 on the road, taking on the Dallas Wings, who are 18-9, 8-4 at home. Dallas a 49% chance, Atlanta a 51% chance. 1.5-point favorites are the Wings. -124 on the money line, +102 for the Dream, 178.5 on the over under. Angel Reese is expected to be out, but they say she's supposed to play in the All-Star game this weekend, so that could be a change, and she should be playing in this game. Tahina Paopao is also expected to return from this game from a leg injury. No significant injuries for the Wings. Wings are 4-1 in their last five, a lone OT loss to the Liberty back on the 20th. And Dream are also 4-1. They have a lone 10-point loss to the Portland Fire. Everywhere else, these teams are just about even. The Dream are 2-0 in this series on the year. 77-72 back on May 12th in Dallas. And then they played again on May 22nd, and they beat them 86-69 in Atlanta. Although that's how things have been, and you guys know that I am normally all about the trends and how things are faring out and looking at the past. I got to go with the future. 8-4 at home, 18-9 on the year. The Wings are also catching fire as Ozzie Fudd is finally really stepping into herself her rookie year. Paige Becker's playing at that sophomore year level you expect. And, I mean, we haven't even touched on Jessica Shepherd at all, who had a triple-double, a 30-point triple-double not too long ago. These are the pieces that are going to help the Wings win this game. So I'm going to go with the Wings over the Dream as well. Now we got two teams that are playing earlier in the week, meeting up with each other. The Liberty, as we know, are going into the weekend 7-7, 15-12 on the road. The Aces, 18-8, 7-5 at home. 40.6% chance for New York, 59.4% chance for Vegas. New York did win the first game in Vegas back on June 23rd, 87-76. We'll be at Michelob Ultra Arena. Satu Sabali is still a game-time decision with that concussion. Janiyah Barker is out for the season with the Aces. Those are the notable injuries. Liberty are coming in 2-3 in their last five, losses to the Fever, Tempo, and Lynx, wins over the Wings and Sky. Meanwhile, the Aces are 3-2, losses to the Mystics and the Fever, but wins over the Tempo, Mercury, and Fire. This one's going to be a little more interesting. It is down the road, and it's hard to tell what's going to happen between this game and the games that they're going to play over the early part of the week. This is June 30th, 10 p.m. on Prime Video, so a great chance to watch a phenomenal game, by the way. But I'm leaning on the side of caution. Asia Wilson, Chelsea Gray, and Jackie Young, and the rest of the Aces squad has been phenomenal over the last couple of weeks. They're trending in the right direction. Granted, they're on the one-game losing streak, but they were just coming off of a win streak before they lost a couple games recently. New York is currently on a two-game win streak, but we don't know how that is going to fare over the next couple of days. So I'm going with the recency bias here of the Aces catching fire like they always do around this time of year and really pushing forward and making a run. I'm going with the Aces to take down the Liberty, which gets us over into the UFC for the weekend. We'll take the main fight out of the main card. The light heavyweight main event will be Magomed Ankalaev versus Bogdan Gusev. Ankalaev 21-2-1. Gusev is 18-3-1. The Russian versus the Uzbekistanian, 6-3 each, 205 pounds each. Ankalaev 34, Gusev 33, 75, 76 inch reach respectively. Both orthodox fighters. This one's going to be extremely fun. It will be at the Etihad Arena in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. It will be a 9 a.m. prelim, a noon main card, both on Paramount Plus. This one's going to be fun, but I'm rocking with the Russian because those guys are crazy, and Ankalaev has been insane in his recent bouts, so I've got him coming out on top, which gets us into our last pick for the weekend. The Tigers already coming in down 2-1 in the season series to Baltimore. They have a great chance to try and win out this series. In game one, they're putting Montero on the mound against Bradish. 46.7% chance for the Tigers, 53.3% chance for the Orioles. When we look at game two, which is Troy Milton versus Dean Kremer, 40.9% for the Orioles, 59.1% chance for the Tigers. In game three of this series, Skubal versus Rogers, 61.2% chance for the Tigers, 38.8% for the Orioles. I'm going with the Tigers because the Aces are on the mound. That gives me the Aces to beat both the Fire and the Liberty. Liberty beating the Sparks. Dream or Wings over the Dream. Ankalaev over Guskov and Tigers taking down the Orioles. Make sure you enjoy your Tigers footage or coverage here and keep enjoying those sports as we'll be back with more Mid Madness next week here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.